Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabish. I'm here with Diana Yu, the art director of the Pew Research Center here in D.C. Diana, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's good to be on.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally got to get together because we met in person for the first time at Tapestry, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago. So now we actually get to sit down and chat. And it sounds like you guys are doing some incredible work here at Pew. I want to start by getting a sense of your background and what it is you do here as art director.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been here for nearly 8 years, and as art director, I'm sort of responsible for just the general creative direction of the center, and I created sort of our visual look and feel that is translated in our reports, on our website, as well as just our overall brand, which extends to our logo, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
And all of our collateral. And I have a team of about 5 designers currently who create most of our work on the website and in our reports. Our researchers do as well, many of the graphics in our reports.
So can you talk a little bit about how does the workflow work here? So when you have, you know, a huge team of researchers going through, the 6 of you essentially, so how do you funnel that down? get that out the door.
Well, it's interesting because actually the designers tend to spend about 80% of their time working on the static graphics that go into our reports. And the thing is that with only 6 of us, there's only so much we can do, and we produce a lot of reports, hundreds of graphics in each one in some cases. So our researchers use templates that we created to do the bulk of those graphics, mm-hmm. and our designers focus on the more complex ones.
And the templates are in Excel?
Templates are in Excel,
okay.
and Word.
Okay.
And we've made them as consistent as we can. We've given the researchers guidelines and sort of best practices to use. And in general, it works really well. It's amazing how far we've come just in the last 5 years mm-hmm. Since we implemented them. They're able to do, again, I think at least 75% of the graphics on their own, and they look really great. Then the designers come in, clean things up here and there,
mm-hmm.
and then for the graphics that are more involved or maps or, you know, those things, the designers do themselves.
Okay. So let's talk about audiences then in terms of how Pew communicates to different audiences, because I saw a graph about a week ago or two now, and it was from the UN, essentially it was UN or UNESCO maybe, UNICEF.
UNICEF,
right. And so it had all these different countries, and it had 3 years for each country, and instead of doing like a little line chart or, you know, paired bar charts or what you sort of might do as a default in Excel, right, it had a bar for each country for 1 year, and then a circle for another year, and then a line for another year, all sort of like all on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really hard to read.
Yep.
Even though the title was really good, mm-hmm. The title sort of met the audience. But I sort of got into a little bit of a Twitter discussion with people about, you know, I don't really like this graph. I think it can be made clearer. And someone said, well, maybe the people who read this report are familiar enough with the graph that it's okay. And my response to that was, well, maybe they just don't know. They just don't know what it would be if it, you know, what it would look like if it was better. So I would guess that UNICEF is doing the same sort of thing that you're doing, which is trying to communicate to different audiences, sort of like, here's a graph for the lay reader or maybe the less sophisticated reader, but here are all the details even packed within the graph.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you're thinking about communicating to, say, the public and then to the sophisticated researcher, are you trying to walk that line as well?
I think we are. I think we do tend to make sure that our graphics first and foremost are readable to a general audience or an informed audience. But we also try to make sure that if it's possible to label everything, you know, we are very strict about ensuring that our axes are labeled properly, that we're clear about the framing of the graphic. I think we do a pretty good job of that in our static graphics. It's something that just in general we think about with our research reports and making sure that they are readable to a general audience,
mm-hmm.
or to an informed audience, but include detailed tables or other things for those that are interested in learning more or taking our data and doing something else with it.
Right.
That's something that is obviously many people maybe listening to this right now may have used our data in the past, and we try to make that accessible. The reports often are not places that we will have all that detail. It'll be in a detailed table, or
right.
we'll publish our full data set. And those are the things that are really useful to that
niche.
Exactly.
Right. So do you get pushback from the researchers here about creating a graphic that may try to be reaching a wider audience? And the researchers are like, no, I want it, I understand this graph, and therefore, people like me will understand this graph, but maybe not the wider world. Do you have that tension too?
Oh, yeah. there's definitely creative tension, and I think in a good way, where especially when we're discussing things like economic concepts that have a very wonky audience, for example, we may have sort of a staged approach in the report. So the overview, we know that's the part that most people will read, or at least read the first page or two of. And that's going to be geared more toward general takeaways and big findings. As you get further and further into the report, you're going to find some more detailed tables, some more detailed complex charts that we're expecting really only that niche audience is going to be interested in reading.
And those more complex charts, are they repeating content that was delivered earlier? Maybe repeating and then adding additional pieces to it.
Yes.
So are you thinking when you're creating or designing a report like this, are you sort of thinking, I don't know what the right analogy or metaphor is, maybe like the martini glass is sort of the good one, right? It's like the broad overview and then diving in. And so how are you thinking about physically like designing the report type? So does it have an executive summary? And then, so can you just walk us through maybe how you sort of design each of these reports as you try to meet each of these different audiences?
Sure, absolutely. And it's hard to say design because really the researchers do so much of this. The general report structure is an overview, which we've also called an executive summary in the past. And it has a very specific approach. And it's not necessarily bullet points, but it really goes through as briefly as possible the main findings. And then usually reports are structured sort of by topic area or something, some logical structure within it to direct people who are interested in different aspects of the work. So, for example, if we're talking about the middle class, there may be different aspects of the middle class that researchers are interested in who are reading this report, and that'll be sort of organized by chapter. We may also do that with larger like religion reports, for example. We have global religion reports where it'll be broken down by Christianity, Islam, on and on.
So, now, because you have these multiple audiences, have you done any testing with these different audiences? Because one of the comments I got about this UNICEF graph and this Twitter thing was, well, maybe their readers are comfortable with it and that's why it's that way. Where my instinct is that they're probably not actually asking the readers whether it's a good graph. They just have been doing it this way for a long time and just continue to do it. But have you sat down with users and readers and said, you know, what do you like about this graph? Are you getting content out of this graph?
Yes, we have done user testing. A lot of it is with our digital work, so interactives, and we focused a lot on getting our special features sort of to work really well on the web.
Okay.
And so much of our research is associated with that. But we have talked to users about specific graphics, I think we found some interesting things. We don't have any really huge conclusions to come to. But for one, we've got a little bit of some mini research in that we did a science knowledge quiz a couple of years ago. And one of the questions in the quiz was we presented the audience with a chart. And it was a scatter graph. And I'm sorry again, sorry. I need to say this properly. I think this comes to like data literacy.
Or graphic literacy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all right. Related, but yeah, about being, this is the one where it's like 60-something% know how to read a scatter plot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting one. Good. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Do you need to?
We'll cut it later, but yeah, let me just count down and you just continue. 5, 4, 3.
So on a podcast a few months back, you were talking to Kim Reese, and she actually mentioned how she felt like the data visualization community and really academia and the research community as well have a tendency to underestimate the public's data and graphic literacy.
Yeah,
and of course, this is something that Alberto Cairo has talked about as well. And in his book, he used one of our charts, which was from a science knowledge survey that we did. And in the survey, we presented respondents with a scatter plot that showed sugar consumption on the x-axis and number of decayed teeth per person on the y-axis. You can imagine this. And each dot was a country. So they were asked then to choose from 4 responses to identify which statement best described the data in the chart. And overall, 63% of American adults gave the correct answer, which was the more sugar people eat, the more likely they are to get cavities. Which, you know, again, 63% were able to read this chart, which is pretty great. And, you know, 79% of college-educated respondents got it right, and 84% with a postgraduate degree got it right. And, you know, I think it's great. I do think that maybe this task was made a little easier by the fact that we had these response options, that people were able, if they couldn't quite figure it out,
They got to choose from some conclusion, right? Right. Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
Exactly. I suspect we would have gotten a different result if we had just asked people to interpret the chart without any answers, any answer options. So this sort of relates to some of the results of user testing that we've found in with our charts, and usually associated with an interactive feature.
Okay.
But the main thing is that we found that even college-educated users, which is sort of our main baseline, they experience a bit of a learning curve when they're presented with unusual chart types or unfamiliar chart types.
And so, before you go on, so unusual chart types would be like anything out of the bar, column, line, pie chart.
Yes.
Group. Okay.
Exactly.
So a scatter plot would be we would call an unusual chart type for this.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
So one of the things that we've seen is that something our UX specialist refers to as satisficing. I think I've heard it before elsewhere. But people have a tendency to kind of invent a good enough interpretation of charts. And they're just not always careful about consulting headlines, titles, legends, you know, all the things that we put there specifically to make them easier to read. And I've, you know, we record some of our user interviews, and I've heard some where, you know, a user has been asked what they think a chart means, and they'll look for a moment and they'll go, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I see. This chart means that XYZ is the case, and that makes sense. Great.
Right.
The trouble is XYZ is totally wrong.
And they've already moved on.
They'll say they had a great experience. Oh, yeah, this was, you know, I had no problem understanding what's going on, but they
got it wrong.
They got it wrong.
And these aren't charts. Like, you're not just showing them the scatter plot region. Like, it has a title and it has all the labels and all the annotation, right?
Absolutely. Yep. It's exactly as we plan to publish it, or as close as we can get.
So is that just terrifying? I mean,
a little.
Yeah. So because I think we always think that if we have active titles, if we have good annotation, that people will be able to not just understand the graph, but they'll understand the content. And it sounds like for at least some of the people who are looking at the graph, they didn't get that. So what do we do about that? I don't know.
I know. I was writing some notes before this, and that's basically where I stopped. I don't know what to do about this.
But you guys, you guys do have very active titles, right? Mm-hmm. But that's one thing that I've noticed about Pew. And actually, the UNICEF example is actually a weird example of this mm-hmm. of this case, right? Because the title of that chart is pretty active, even though the visual itself is, I would argue, not that great.
Mm-hmm.
So are you? So I guess the first question is that a philosophy that you guys have here, that ARC titles are going to be really active? And then when you think about that, and when you're making them active, are you also thinking about, are you trying to be as sort of objective as you can with the title, or are you sort of leading people down a road to, like, here's the causal story we're trying to tell?
Right. I think using the word objective is tricky because, yeah. of course, we're...
I think neutral is a better word. So
yeah.
you can say... Let's go back to the scatter plot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a scatter plot of tooth decay and sugar consumption. Alternatively, that title could have said something like, the more sugar you eat, the more likely your teeth are going to rot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so those are two different titles. So I guess, are you on the sort of more active side or the more neutral side?
I think we do, part of our style guide is to be with the more active side.
More active side, yeah.
So, and I think of it more as any chart needs to have a point that it's making. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course, charts, especially with a lot of data in them, may be making many points. So there may be multiple things you can take from them. But usually you have to focus on one main takeaway. And that's what the headline should give you a hint
yeah.
of.
Yeah.
Then we use the subhead in the chart to provide some more context. So, for example, I was mentioning earlier that the framing of a chart is really important,
mm-hmm.
that people understand, you know, what's the basis for this? Are we talking about all adults? Are we talking about just internet users? And the subhead allows us to essentially write the rest of the graph as a sentence. So it'll say percent of American adults who say abortion should be, and then the labels on the chart would say legal in all cases, illegal in some cases, illegal in all cases.
Oh, interesting.
Things like that. So that a person, again, who is paying attention and reading it can easily figure out kind of what the chart is saying without just having to interpret the labels.
But you're also doing, what I think is really clever about that, is you are in some ways forcing the reader to go into the chart. Right? Because you could just say, you know, more than half of Americans believe X,
mm-hmm.
right? And that would be true. But the way you frame the title forces someone to actually go into the, read the data labels.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. At least the subtitle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Takes you into it.
Yeah.
And I think with something like what I just described, it's fairly straightforward. There's probably not going to be a lot of confusion, even if we don't have that detailed subhead, but it helps avoid confusion when, you have more complex things happening in the
mm-hmm.
chart. For example, it would be very easy to confuse a chart that is either showing the percentage of Hispanics who identify as Catholic versus the percentage of Catholics who are Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd have a Hispanic label, you'd have a Catholic label.
Right.
Depending on how those are oriented, it'd be very easy to confuse those two. So again, I always say it, you know, we need to write it so that it reads as a sentence
mm-hmm.
as much as possible, that the data in the graph completes the sentence.
Yeah.
And if people don't read it, that
yeah.
makes it very hard. But, you know, we've done everything that we possibly can to, we've given them a hint as to what they're going to see, and then we've walked them through
right.
And used the data and the chart to complete that.
So do you think of these charts as applicable to a PDF report, the same as on the website as an HTML graph, the same as what you might put on Twitter? Or are you, because you've made this active sort of succinct headline, like, do they work on all these different platforms? Or are you thinking about, well, we have this thing works really nicely here
mm-hmm.
in the front part of the report. We're going to make it different for the back part of the report. We're also make it different for the website and for Twitter. Like there's so many ways to reach people now. Like, are you thinking about all these different ways, or have you gotten like that core philosophy more or less works for all the different channels?
I think we've tried to make that core philosophy work
yeah.
for all the channels. There are cases where we find we need to adjust things, especially for example, the featured image for a report.
Mm-hmm.
The format for that is very specific, what you know Facebook will show or what Twitter will show.
Yeah.
And so we format our graphics accordingly. But in terms of the messaging, it's the same in all those cases. Of course, we may have tables within the report that are not things that we're necessarily planning to put out on social media, but as much as possible, you know, try to keep them consistent.
Right.
And I think it does work pretty well. For workflow reasons, it's important too, because we just don't have the manpower to be able to make a special version for every single one.
Right.
And, you know, we essentially create the PDF first.
Mm-hmm.
And then work backward for the online version,
mm-hmm.
and then
to social media,
and then everything goes on to social media. Exactly. So,
And
I'm sure that's probably what many other organizations are working with as well. Especially if they're creating something like this UNICEF report, for example, is a PDF only, I believe.
Yeah. And the thing about that UNICEF report is that the graph would not work on Twitter. Like it's too big, it's too dense, there's too much on it. However, one could imagine taking 5 of the or 30 countries or something and making that smaller graph. But like you said, you're not going to do that for every report. And you're not going to, you have a report with 35 figures. You're not going to start doing that for all the different figures. It's just, it's too time consuming.
Right.
But of course, if people come get a conclusion out of a graph and think that they actually understood it, but they didn't, then I'm really not sure. That's like shaking the whole foundation of everything we do.
Yeah, I know. I was afraid to mention that, but it is something we found, and it's hard to say exactly. It's hard to extrapolate how much, you know, a user testing scenario is very specific, right? They've been presented with something. They know that they're supposed to be testing it and, you know, looking for something. Mm-hmm. Usually there's something that the person who's asking for the testing is looking for. So it's hard to say whether that's how people in the wild, I guess, experience things. But it seems that definitely there are cases in user testing where when people read a chart correctly, for example, and it doesn't compute, it doesn't match with something that they already think is the case, their tendency is to go, oh, there must be a mistake here. Because this
doesn't match my expectations.
Yep,
right.
Doesn't fit my expectations, or I don't believe this to be true. So there must be a publication error here, and so that's something that we encounter, I think, on social media all the time.
Yeah.
People will engage with us and say exactly that. So,
right.
I can only conclude that there are some things this user testing that. Our real world scenarios.
So, when you do hear that feedback, this doesn't really accord with my expectations. Does that tend to be? I know we're simplifying here a bit, but like, does that tend to be on like the simpler chart types? Like, I wonder if people see a bar chart and they're familiar with that, and so they may take a little more time with it because interpreting the graph is so much easier than say a scatter plot, which is a little more unusual. And maybe they just don't take enough time with it.
Yeah.
Or it's not as familiar with it. And so they read it as if it agrees with their preconceived notions. And so then they just do that and move on. Whereas a bar chart is just so much more familiar that if it looks much different than what they expected, they're willing to contact you guys and say, wait, this isn't right.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I don't know that we've...
We've
explored that specifically, or we've been able to. We haven't done enough user testing in this way to be able to compare the reactions to a simpler chart versus a more complex chart. But it's definitely something that I think we should do, because it's important. I mean, we have an informed audience, but it's important to know what they expect and what their graphic literacy level is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great that you're doing the user testing because I don't think a lot of places do the user testing or enough user testing. So I think it's great that you're doing that. So that's fantastic. Well, Diana, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun and educational. perhaps shocking, certainly educational. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thanks to everyone for tuning into this week's episode. If you have any comments or questions, please send me a note on the comments section below or on Twitter, or you can find Diane on Twitter or the rest of the Pew Research staff. I'm sure they'd love to hear you yell at them about what you didn't expect in their graphs. So thanks again for tuning in. This has been the Policy Biz Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.